This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
So I'm Tom Clapp from the Human Rights Law Centre, and I'm the Director of Communications.
So what's your role with the Wispapwa Movement for Freedom?
Well, the Human Rights Law Centre, I guess, doesn't really have a role within Wispapwa, or we don't even really have an opinion on independence. Our concern, I guess, and interest in this topic really is the lack of protections for human rights in Wispapwa, or not so much, I guess, the lack of protections, but the way human rights are curtailed routinely in Wispapwa. And our other key interest, I guess, is the role that Australia can play within that context and through Australian foreign policy. So, for example, we think Australia has a unique role to play in the region in promoting human rights. And we think that, unfortunately, when it comes to Wispapwa, Australia's really put, I guess, political interests ahead of principle, and have continuously turned a blind eye to the kind of atrocities that are actually happening on our doorstep in Wispapwa.
Why would Australia do that when Australia is so quick to act in other conflict areas in the world?
Yeah, look, I think that's a really interesting point. Is when we look at the role that Australia plays on a global stage, Australia seems quite happy to speak out about human rights abuses when they're happening in far flung areas, whether it's Libya or Afghanistan. But when it's right on our doorstep, one of our closest neighbours, I guess there's a little bit more tension or political collateral to put at risk. So Australia's really historically taken a much more conservative approach in raising human rights concerns with Indonesia, and to our detriment, I believe.
Why does Australia have such a close connection to Indonesia, and why, in your opinion, I'm not sure you can express your personal opinion here, Tom, but why would Australia sit back and allow Indonesia to commit human rights atrocities to West Papuans, yet be so quick to condemn actions, say, by people like Saddam Hussein or Gaddafi in Libya?
Sure, I think the political reality is that Australia has other political priorities and domestic priorities. So, for example, I think right now a key factor in Australia's foreign policy is this idea of stopping the boats. Australia is reliant on Indonesia's cooperation to stop asylum seekers coming to Australia, and therefore I think are willing to really turn a blind eye to some other things in return for help on this issue. Likewise, I think Australia plays a similar role with Sri Lanka. There's a great deal of many human rights concerns in Sri Lanka, but Australia is really again reliant on Sri Lanka to stop people smuggling and to stop the boats, as our government likes to remind us. However, at what point, I think the Australian people really have to ask, at what point are we willing to sweep serious and ongoing human rights under the carpet for short-term political and domestic political gain? The Human Rights Law Centre does not believe that's a sound or principled policy approach, and it's not going to serve Australia well in the long term.
I'm not sure if you can answer this, but I'm going to ask it anyway. So Australia has stepped up its navy on its borders. But are the boats still leaving Indonesia and Sri Lanka? I mean, they can stop the boats arriving here, but have the boats actually stopped leaving these countries?
I think part of the problem of this particular policy is the secrecy that in which it's conducted. So there has been a decline in the transparency in terms of what's been called operational matters. We're not sure how many boats are leaving and arriving and that kind of stuff. I know the government's very keen to highlight that the boats are no longer successfully arriving in Australia, or there's been a dramatic decline, but it's hard to say whether or not how many boats are leaving Indonesia and being intercepted. But I dare say that there has been a decline in recent months.
So do you think it's a fair price to pay, though, for Australia as a whole to step back and not pay any attention to what's happening in West Papua in order for boats to stop arriving full of refugees?
No, I think it's ghastly that Australia would be willing to turn a blind eye to serious human rights abuses that are occurring on our doorstep in order to further its own domestic political agenda of stopping the boats.
What is the situation in West Papua right now?
So the human rights situation in West Papua has been a concern for many, many years. And the kind of issues that we see really is a severe restriction on fundamental human rights that in Australia we take for granted. The kind of rights, for example, to freely express your political views, to peacefully assemble, to hold protests and rallies and these kind of things. And in Papua, those kind of actions are routinely and curtailed in a very heavy-handed way. Beyond that, we've also seen incidents of torture, of political assassinations, abductions, and these kind of things. So we're talking about very serious and ongoing human rights problems in Papua.
Why is Indonesia in West Papua?
The Papuan provinces are currently part of Indonesia, and I guess that's a historical effect from the creation of the Indonesian state. When the Indonesians were overthrowing the Dutch colonial rulers, they had a vision of creating a unified nation that really stretches quite far from the east across to the west, and is quite an achievement. But one of the challenges there is that within such a large nation, there are diverse cultures, and tensions can often arise there. In the case of Papua in particular, I think there's this a more long-standing issue really, which is that Papua was sort of moving towards independence in its own right during the 50s. So by the end of that decade, there was the Morning Star flag, there were Papuan government officials, and it was very much moving towards independence. But it really got swept up with Indonesians' vision for this larger nation. And so when the dispute kind of erupted in the 60s about, well, is Papua going to be part of Indonesia or is it going to be independent? A summit at the UN decided to hold a referendum in 1967 to decide this matter. And in the four years that in the lead up to that referendum, Indonesia was to have provisional control of Papua. And a key thing that happened during that time was obviously within Indonesia, the rise of General Suharto, which really transformed for the worse Indonesian politics. It was a time of great bloodshed across Indonesia, and including in West Papua. So by the time the 67 referendum came to be, we had seen 4 years of ongoing military violence and build up within Papua. And the Act of Free Choice, that was the name of the referendum, is now referred to by Papuan people as the Act of No Choice. And it really was quite a sham referendum. It was sort of decided that the Papuan people were too primitive, if you like, to participate in democracy. So what happened was about 1,000 elders or people to represent a population of nearly 1 million were handpicked and were taken to a military camp where they would be educated on how to vote in the referendum. And there were Australian journalists, or one in particular was present at the time and reported seeing all sorts of brutality and people really threatened to have their things like having their tongues cut out if they were to vote no. So unsurprisingly, at the end of this education process, the vote was unanimous and it produced a result that Papua would become part of Indonesia. Interestingly, two Papuans had gathered information about this, what a sham the process had been, and they compiled testimony and different evidence, and they were planning to travel to New York to present this evidence to the UN to say, look, this shouldn't be ratified. But interestingly, on their way to New York, they had to go through PNG, and on the Manus Island, Australia, which was in control of PNG at the time, actually detained them at the request of the Indonesian authorities, and they were prevented from ever travelling to New York to present that information. And unfortunately, I guess that Act of Free Choice was ratified by the UN, and that really gives the legal basis as to why Indonesia is currently in Papua and believes it's part of the Indonesian nation.
Are the UN aware of what's happening there? Are they in there at all?
there isn't a presence in Papua. The issue of the act of free choice does occasionally come up at the UN, and I think it was the Prime Minister of Vanuatu last year actually made a very impassionate speech at the UN about this is a topic that needs to be revisited. It's a great injustice that was done in the name of the UN, and it really needs to be revisited, because ultimately the Papuan people have never really had a genuine and fair method in which to express their political desire and motivations and whether or not they want self-determination. And that's a key right that they've been denied. So I think there really is merit in that argument that the act of free choice should be re-examined by the UN.
Now, you mentioned it's a former Dutch colony. Have the Dutch been back at all? Are they playing any role?
No. Yeah.
No, they've just gone.
In the case of Indonesia, they were overthrown. Like, there was a war of independence, so Indonesians fought for many years to overthrow the Dutch colonial rulers. That was all tied up with during World War II, and the obviously the invading Japanese forces. It's a fascinating history. And the other key issue, I guess, in when you're looking at Australia's motivations during all of this is that Cold War kind of mentality of fear of communism and Russian influence. So the Communist Party within Indonesia wasn't in power during the 50s and early 60s, but it did have a great level of popularity and support amongst the community. And President Sukarno's approach to politics was very much they talked about it being a consensus-based one. And so there were lots of voices in Indonesian politics, and the Americans and the Australians had a deep suspicion and fear of a growing communist movement within Indonesia, and the evidence would suggest, you know, played quite a interfering role to make sure that those elements were suppressed, and the rise of the dictatorship under General Suharto was, I guess, aided really, and then supported for the many decades that Suharto was in power.
Now, just to be very sure, when you say supported by the Australian government, you're talking about consecutive governments, not just Conservatives, not just Labor, but consecutive
governments. Yeah.
And what's the role of the other Asia Pacific leaderships in the area? Do you know if New Zealand or say Fiji, obviously Vanuatu, but is there anybody else?
Yeah, I'm not too sure officially what kind of stance countries like New Zealand have taken. I know there's lots of kind of grassroots support, and there's lots of local councils and provincial kind of forms of government that often express their support for human rights in Papua with flag raising ceremonies and that kind of stuff. But I think at the national level, not a great deal has been said, other than the Melanesian countries that have taken quite a vocal stand on the issue.
Okay. Are you able to go into any detail about what sort of human rights abuses are happening
In Papua?
In Papua,
sure. So the kind of human rights abuses that happen in West Papua, I guess primarily there's not much space, or there's no space really for free and frank political discussion. So the right to free speech is severely and routinely curtailed in Papua. So an example is merely raising a flag, the Morning Star flag, which is a symbol of Papuan independence, is an offence. And that's a crime that can land you in jail for up to 20 years. So a very symbolic but simple act of free speech there is not permitted. But beyond that, and more troublingly, I guess, is when protests and peaceful assemblies are violently dispersed. In the last few years, there's been a number of shootings and even deaths that have resulted when authorities have moved in to move on protests, and at the more extreme end, there are documented cases of torture, political assassinations and abductions and those kind of things. So it's the full suite of human rights abuses really at the rather extreme end.
Now, the types of people who are getting targeted with the human rights abuses, are you just looking at activists or journalists, or are you looking at your ordinary everyday West Papuan?
I think primarily you're looking at more activists. So I don't think. My understanding, anyway, is unlike, say, Timor during the 80s and 70s, where there was sort of this open hostility towards the general population, in Papua, I think for your everyday person, those kind of human right abuses might not be a daily occurrence. But if anyone's engaged in these kind of political activities where they're actively trying to have political discussions about self-determination or about independence, about these kind of topics, then I think they really are in danger of being the victims of various human rights abuses.
Do you know if any proof is actually required by the Indonesians that these conversations are actually taking place, or is it a climate of fear, like anyone can accuse someone of doing something and then...
I'm sure there is a lot of fear amongst certain communities, but I guess no one's denying that these discussions are taking place. So, for example, a few years ago at the, I think it was the third Papuan People's Congress, it was a big gathering where they were discussing independence. The flag was raised, the Morning Star flag was raised, and they elected government officials and declared an independent West Papua. So obviously that was a provocative kind of political stance, but something that they are entitled to do. The military and the police responded on that day by opening fire onto the crowd and moving people on. So there's no real dispute that these kind of conversations are taking place. And as I've said earlier, the Human Rights Law Centre doesn't have an opinion on independence. Our concern really is about people should be free to have those kind of discussions. Indonesia is meant to be a modern, healthy democracy that has signed various human rights treaties, and we're simply asking for those kind of human rights norms to be respected. Even if you don't agree with someone's opinion, you should be able to allow them the right to freely express their opinion in a safe environment.
So, as an organisation, are you looking for West Papua to gain independence, or are you looking for it to basically at least have free political expression?
Yeah, so as I said, the Human Rights Law Centre doesn't have a position on independence. Our interest, I guess, in this topic is purely the human rights conditions in Papua and what Australia can do to help promote and protect human rights in our region through Australian foreign policy.
Is Australia doing anything at the moment?
Unfortunately, Australia really has taken, has turned a blind eye to the various problems in West Papua. We had a few comments from the previous foreign minister, which I thought were sort of positive in that at least acknowledged that there were some problems there. But I think with the current government, there's even a step backwards to going back to this position where we won't really acknowledge that there's a problem in Papua. We're much more interested in focusing on our relationship with the Indonesian government and trying to reassure them that we fully support their actions in Papua. And I guess further than that, if you do look at Australia's military involvement with Indonesia, it throws up some interesting questions too. So we support a counter-terrorism unit called Detachment 88.
Okay. What do they do?
Well, they're meant to be a counter-terrorism unit, and I'm sure they've had some successes in that area. However, they're also accused of perpetrating human rights abuses in Papua. So I think that's an issue that really should be reviewed by the Australian government. We should review our relationship with Indonesia's military and really make sure that we've got safeguards in place that ensure that we're not directly or indirectly supporting human rights abuses. Because I think the Australian people, would be comfortable to a degree that we have a working relationship with the Indonesian military and that there's a role to play there in collaboration stuff. But I don't think the Australian people would be comfortable if Australia is actually supporting this, I guess, a hit squad, if you like, that's conducting or perpetrating human rights abuses in Papua.
Okay, so what else is happening in West Papua? So now that Indonesia is in rule, what else are they doing? Are they taking advantage of any sort of industry or...?
I guess another one of the contributing factors, I guess, to the tension and dispute in West Papua is the fact that West Papua is a very resource-rich area, incredible forests, incredible mineral deposits. So some of the biggest, I think the biggest gold mine in the world is Freeport Mine, located in Papua. So there's a great deal of profit being derived from Papua's resources. However, there's an argument that a lot of the local Papuan people aren't really benefiting from the vast amount of money being generated by the resources there. So I think that's an extra layer of tension in Papua. And the reality is that there's a lot of people thinking, well, look, our resources are being extracted and great profits are being made, but we're not benefiting from them. All we're getting is sort of environmental destruction and displacement from our, I guess, cultural lands. So that definitely is another factor, and it's a factor that Australia is involved in. There's a number of Australian companies that are operating in these industries within Papua. So that's another, I guess, link to Australia, and if Australians are concerned of that, looking at, in terms of their superannuation and shares and that kind of stuff, as to what companies we're supporting in Papua and whether they're behaving in an ethical fashion.
So it's not just the government that has turned a blind eye to the atrocities in West Papua. Do you think the Australian people are choosing better super packages or better returns on their investments over acknowledging what's happening in West Papua?
No, I'd like to give, I guess, the Australian people the benefit of the doubt there. I think for a number of people, maybe it's just it's ignorance that we're not aware, really, or don't appreciate the incredible and complicated history within Indonesia and Papua, one of our closest neighbours. It's quite interesting that I think there is a lack of knowledge and understanding of Indonesian history. But I think that most Australians, if they were, when they become aware, or if they knew the details of the kind of human rights abuses that are occurring on our doorstep in Papua, would not be happy with it, and would, I think, the Australian idea of a fair go and standing up for what is right is something that resonates in the Australian public. So I think really there's this detachment between the views of the Australian people and their values and Australian foreign policy. I think Australian foreign policy is very, it currently being driven by political motivations, and there's not enough principle in standing up and defending human rights in our regions. And I think that's really the gap, and the Human Rights Law Centre would really encourage the Australian government to take a much more proactive stand in raising awareness of the problems in West Papua, and encouraging, using our unique relationship with Indonesia, and actually encouraging the Indonesian authorities to, create a space where these kind of political discussions can happen in a peaceful and democratic manner.
Do you think Indonesians themselves, the general Indonesian public, are aware of what their government are doing in West Papua?
I'm probably not all that well positioned to comment on the internal Indonesian kind of attitudes, but the people in Indonesia are aware of ongoing problems in Papua and have been for decades, really. But I guess a key thing to remember in terms of the Indonesian perspective in this issue is that they very much see Papua as the sort of last piece in the puzzle for their quest for the formation of this great country, Indonesia, and for them it's very much tied up in their struggle for liberation when they were overthrowing the Dutch and the colonial masters. They very much saw their intervention in Papua as that of one of liberation. And I think in the early days, that there's a lot of merit in those arguments, but I think what's happened in the subsequent years under General Suharto, those kind of more noble objectives, if you like, were really, I guess, corrupted, and as they were across Indonesia. And we see a lot of violence and political repression.
Can I ask, why do you care so much about West Papua? Why? What about the other, say, spots? Why West Papua? Why not, say Fiji?
Sure. Well, the Human Rights Law Centre, I guess, like many human rights organisations, we're a not-for-profit organisation. We have a limited budget, limited staff members. So really, we, with our strategic plan, have identified a number of key focus areas that we focus on. One of those areas is Australian foreign policy and the role that human rights play. And within that kind of section, I guess two areas that we look at quite closely are Australia's relationship with Indonesia and also Australia's relationship with Sri Lanka, because at the moment we believe they're two very topical and important relationships that feed into various human rights issues, whether it be the rights of asylum seekers to seek protection in Australia, or whether it's human rights problems within those countries. So they're just areas that the centre's identified that we can focus our work on, but that's not to say there aren't other pressing human rights issues in the region. It just really comes down to where to focus our energy with limited resources.
Okay.
But if people would like to help us, obviously they can make a donation on our website, which is hrlc.org.au.
Is there any other way, if anyone's listening to this right now and they want to help the West Papuan cause?
Sure, there's various solidarity groups that I'm aware of within Australia that campaign on these kind of issues. So if people are interested, I'd encourage them to, Google West Papua and get in touch with some of the local groups.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.